This content is issued by Zeus Capital Limited, which is authorised and regulated in the United Kingdom by the Financial Conduct Authority for designated investment business and is a member firm of the London Stock Exchange. Nothing in this podcast should be viewed as investment advice. Listeners should consult an investment professional before making any decisions regarding topics mentioned in this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast are those of the participants and not of Zeus. Please note that participants in this podcast may have financial interests in the matters discussed. Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 10th of April. With me today, I have Brian Cook. Brian is a seasoned entrepreneur with 30 years of experience building businesses in the fitness and wellness sector. Brian's most recent company is StretchMed, a one-to-one stretching franchise model founded in November 2019, which we'll get into later. Brian, welcome.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem at all. Where are you today?
So I am speaking to you from sunny Puerto Rico.
Oh, how amazing. So I guess the beautiful Caribbean Sea?
Yes, very much so.
So as I like to do to start with these, I'd love to start with your backstory, Brian, where as far back as you'd like to take us, really, and then we can wander through your career, highs and lows, to present day.
Yeah, sure. It sounds great. We were chatting a little bit just a few minutes ago, and you made me recall, you know, my first entity. I was actually 12 years old. My dad bought me 25 lobster traps, and he would help me pull the traps because I couldn't physically pull them all at that time. And then I would sell lobsters with my neighbors, basically. And I remember, you know, days going out, working really hard, getting zero lobsters, and then days going out, working really hard, and then dropping a bucket on the scale, and then a guy handing me, you know, $70 in cash, and I thought I was like a millionaire. So, those seeds kind of got planted, and where it wasn't just trading time for money. And then I moved on to construction businesses, landscape businesses, and same idea. I work 1 week, make $800 at, you know, 15 years old, which is a lot of money. But then I have no work the next week. So it was fun. And then, you know, having construction jobs helped me really think about getting back, you know, sticking with school. So, you know, graduated high school, went to college. And then that's where I decided to pursue athletic training and got into personal training. And then a few years into that, my dad actually helped me again at 23. I opened up one of the first brick and mortar one-on-one personal training studios in Massachusetts with, you know, a modest, you know, maybe $3,500 in cash. He got me another maybe $10,000 in credit through different vehicles. And it was just the most bootstrapped, you know, hand-to-mouth concept you'd ever think of, where my first year in business, I had $7,000 of profit.
So what, that'd been late 80s?
Yeah, this would be actually 1995.
Oh,
I opened this up 1995. You know, worked in gyms from 92 to 95 as personal trainer, fitness director, and really kind of fell in love with training people, helping people reach goals, helping people transform. It was super fun, amazing people. And then I'm like, you know, let's make a business out of it. So, and before I started my own studio, I met this amazing gentleman, and he was the father of one of my personal training clients. And we spent a year trying to open a health club. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, 22 years old, having investor meetings, trying to raise capital, floor plans, blueprints done. You know, the gym was going to have a swimming pool. And long and short of it, we couldn't raise the capital. The one-on-one studio was really the consolation of that endeavor. So then I moved down that path and led me doing my own one-on-one studios for a handful of years. You know, got to three locations and blew up, had to sell one, close one. Robin Peter to pay Paul, classic story. And then I took 2 years from 1999 to 2001. So in my entire career, there's only been a 2 year period that I focused on one thing. And that's the challenge. So 1999 to 2001, I took my my one-on-one studio, got it to a real comfortable, you know, 100, 120,000 a year profit, loved what I was doing, loved my clients, everything was amazing. And then I said, well, geez, well, how do I want to grow again? I'm not gonna do what I just did. I just blew myself up. And I always told myself, I was gonna give myself 5 years. And if I didn't make it in 5 years, just go back, graduate school and become an investment banker, just do something different. But I went to a recruiter in Boston. I'll never forget this. And I'm sitting at a traffic light and it's like the middle of the day and I'm watching all these suits just cross the street. And I said to myself, and then I found out that it was like 100 grand a year, 120. I'm like, what? What? Yeah. Like, and then the growth was so minuscule. I was like, then I just went back to my gym and I crushed it. So, and then what I did is after that reality, I started looking at franchising my concept. And in that process, I discovered another franchise that was already in the space. I ended up buying the rights to that franchise. So I actually was a franchisee before a franchisor. So I took my unit and converted it to their brand and then just became a really good developer for the next 5 years.
And what did that brand do? Why was that brand different to your personal training brand?
It was a similar one-on-one brand. The difference was the founder was 10 years older than me. He had the fiscal discipline. He had the framework. He had the platform. He was really instrumental in me kind of coming along, learning how to be a franchisor under, I was basically the mini franchisor in Massachusetts. I got half of all the royalties and franchise fees, and it was invaluable.
So how many sites did you have under him?
So I was able to, and it's kind of funny. He told me later, him and his guy, Kevin, told me later, I sent them an email when I got on board. And I said, you know, guys, I'm going to bend Massachusetts off the map. That's what I said. And they chuckled. They didn't tell me at front, but later they chuckled. So I sold 60 franchises in 5 years and I got 40 open. And many a quarters, I beat the corporate office with how many units they were selling nationwide, just in Massachusetts. So really great experience. It was the first time like I had that experience of someone else caring about my business, because until then, you know, it's pretty lonely as an entrepreneur, business owner. No one cares about your business but you, employees, you know, maybe there for a paycheck. But it was really rewarding to have a team of people that cared about it, cared about the, you know, your business.
And then what happened? How long were you doing that for, and how did you then pivot to change from there?
So in one other real pivotal moment in franchise, I'll never forget, is when I first got on board with this entity, you know, I paid a 10th, I don't know, like I negotiated the rights to Massachusetts for $100,000. This is a great strategy. Negotiated the rights for $100,000, but I only put down $10,000. And then the deal was he kept the next 90,000 of my 50%. So we split everything.
Yeah.
Plus he collected 90, I was made whole. But then we did the first deal. And I had a wealthy investor who was one of my clients. We found this great location. And then he says, you know, Brian, let me negotiate the deal. And I was like, whoa, I got this. You know, my partner's experience with real estate. He goes, I won't blow the deal, but let me see what I can do. So I was like, all right. I let him negotiate the deal. And literally, the $19,000 franchise they paid him, he hands me it back with free rent and build out allowance. And I was like, oh, that's what franchising is. It's this value add that's mainly hidden to people that haven't been through it. So I'll just never forget that moment that he could have just let me sign the deal sight unseen, but instead he made sure we were not leaving any money on the table. And I've now paid that forward with every deal we do. We make sure we do it. We do the best job we can for our franchise owners. And then, so long and short of it, when it was time to leave, so I got aboard with 10 grand and I exited 5 years later for 1.2 million.
Congratulations.
That was my first little like, wow, I woke up that morning. And you know, did I take the summer off and enjoy a new sport fishing boat? No. So it just went great. Started Get In Shape for Women, which is a small group training franchise. And you just kind of, you know, when you love what you do, it's crazy. It's like every day is a day of golfing if you really love what you do. So I just built, and then I built, you know, focused on that company for the next 5 or 6 years. And then
how did you, just to go back to the original, how did you get your exit? Did you sell it back to the original franchisee?
Sold it to another franchisee in the system. So I put it out, you know, I put it up for sale, had multiple people checking it out. And another guy bought it and he ended up hanging on, like he ended up staying with it for another, I don't know, I want to say 10 years. So he definitely got his money back. And it's a good model, you know, for the right brand, the right owner. It's a good model because, you know, local boots on the ground support's pretty valuable for a franchisor.
It's very important, isn't it, actually, to have boots on the ground. And then the women's gym business, is that still in your portfolio? Yeah,
that's been one heck of a learning experience. I'll back you up a minute, actually. I'll talk to you about one of my first disasters. So I look over my career. Every 6 or 7 years, I literally almost did something that could put me out of business. Like, and it's kind of a track record. And I think it's the whole, you know, you got to fail to grow. So at the I was in graduate school and part of what I needed to do, I was like, all right, I'm kind of a crazy entrepreneur. I need to work on framework. I need to slow down. I have to get back. I have to learn how to financial model. When I went to graduate school, and that was one amazing experience. I went 5 years, went to a college called Babson. I'll never forget walking in the door, and it's just this, it's an entrepreneurial college, and it's really focused on, everyone in there is like, wow, how do we make money? I was like, wow, I found my tribe of people. So I had the most amazing experience there for 5 years. It helped me just develop framework now. So now everything I do is this really, really awesome framework. So, but before that, as I just started graduate school, we had a franchise class and we had to do a project. We had to start a franchise. So I didn't want to disclose the new fitness concept I was doing. So we built a home improvement franchise model with my group to model Mr. Handyman. So at the end of the class, I'm like, wow, these numbers look great. I just exited the area rep franchise company. So I had a, you know, $1.2 million in the bank. And sometimes that's problematic for entrepreneurs. If you have one hand around, you do stuff with it. So I asked my group, any takers? No one wanted to do it. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to do it. So I started a franchise model. Really, it never got past the proof of concept model, but it was called Around the House Home Improvement. And it was an amazing experience. It cost me dearly, but I learned a lot. And long and short of it is, it was a home improvement model. We did small jobs. The amazing marketing effort was we gave everyone in the we put an insert in 30,000 newspapers that gave everyone 2 free hours of work, no questions asked. So within 6 months, we had 8 vans roaming around, you know, one town. We're generating, you know, over $100,000 a month. But here's what I learned: we're charging $65 an hour, but I later learned our break even was $75 an hour.
Yeah.
And the worst part of it is the main operations manager I hired to run it just was really the most genius crook in the world. And what he did is, and you know, he would go out to customers and he'd show up at your house and then we started doing bathroom models. So we'd say, hey, if you pay cash, we give you a deal. So he started doing all kinds of deals. And then basically the gig was off when a customer called me and the bathroom didn't come out right. And I, you know, the guy was brilliant. He was able to keep everyone confused. And I was blowing $20,000 a month on home improvement, blowing $20,000 a month on the fitness. And I was blowing $20,000 a month personally. So just imagine $60,000 a month, how quickly $1.2 million starts to disintegrate. So I really learned. So I made a really quick decision and I gave the business away. I literally told the guy, hey, if you take it by the end of the month, it's for free. But when I would run it, it would make $10,000 a month, but then I couldn't run fitness. So, but the great pivot was when I was no longer angry at him, the guy that did this to me. I just said, this is my fault. This isn't his fault. he just did what any good crook would do. I'm the one who built the company that allowed him to steal from me. So from that day forward, my company's now like I have holding accounts that nobody has access to but me. I transfer money into an operating account. So just and then I went back, went back to graduate school, really, really sharpened my modeling skills, and now we're good. So now I kind of got through that. Not that I've made more mistakes, but man, those are that almost took me out of the game. I lost, all in about probably $200,000, $250,000 on that endeavor, and man, that was tough.
Having makes you stronger, I guess.
Yeah, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. That's
exactly right. So then, the women's gym, is that still in your portfolio?
So my next amazing experience was starting this concept called Get a Chip for Women. And what resulted from it was my one-on-one studios were all expensive, $50, $60, $70 a session, people paying $800 a month. And it was already two-thirds women. Let's open up a women's only concept. Let's focus on transformation. Let's do one trainer to eight women. So there's a smaller ratio, decent ratio. And then we charge 3 month, 6 month, 12 month packages paid in full. Cause when you come, you get results. So it's a lot of commitment built in. And then literally we went on a tear, like every store was cash flowing $100,000 first year open. We had an owner that was able to get to 10 locations with just retained earnings, no outside debt or capital. And then all the group fitness hit the scene, all the CrossFit and the Orange Theory, the Pure Bar. And the problem is we were paid in full model. They were monthly EFT model. So that disruption cost us. And the next thing I didn't anticipate was charlatan attorneys. I never had experience with attorneys, and I didn't realize. So we had a real good charlatan attorney that was able to convince 30, 40 franchisees to get together and all breach their contract at the same time. So when that happens, it's like a run on the bank. You're just really limited. So we had to let a bunch go and, live to fight another day. And then COVID. And then, we kind of got through that broadly. COVID took another 20 or so stores from us. So we're here, we're back, we're starting to grow that brand again. And I'm excited we did it, new, complete new build all, new workout model. And I'm excited to get that back in the mat because fitness is definitely, I love StretchMed, but fitness is definitely still main passion of mine and running, building boutique fitness concepts.
And I guess, boutique fitness concepts have been very successful. I mean, you mentioned a few just then, but I guess also the demand for a personalized fitness service is also growing. It must be a lot more than it was in the early 90s or mid 90s when you first started.
Yeah, very saturated. And this new launch of Get in Shape for Women, which is going to be exciting, is that what makes it us different is that it's a transformation model. So it's transformation first, friendship second. And that the capacity of the studio is 160 members. So really, it's designed to attract 100 to 136 ladies that are interested in transformation.
And is that a full transformation? So is that nutrition as well as exercise?
Weight training, cardio, nutrition, and accountability. So it's a complete solution. The equipment, everything about the model is it's the most advanced, fitness program that I've ever seen on the market, which is great. Squatting, lunging, power cleans, deadlifts, pull-ups, just every compound movement that matters. And then we just master compound movements, get you in a caloric deficit, and then just be patient and watch yourself transform.
And how long does that transformation take? How long is the lift class?
So the program, it's 3 days a week. It's $20 a session. That's it. And then we've done many, many rounds of these case studies where we had a whole cohort of ladies, the average weight loss was like 6 pounds in 7 days, just following eating six meals a day, following this routine. So it's really like there's a million ways to do this. We just pick a singular method that's widely scaled, all different, whether you're 18 or 80, you can perform in this environment. So, you know, real excited. We're negotiating the first relaunch out in LA. We've got a location in LA that we're close to signing a lease. And then, TBD on that one, and really cool.
And then should we move on to StretchMed?
Yeah. We have both brands right now. So what brought me to StretchMed was really seeing if I go back 2015, a family friend had invited me out for coffee and he wanted to get some advice on something. He knew I was in the business and I said, sure. And he asked me about one-on-one stretching. I was like, wow, I haven't heard about one-on-one stretching. He said, yeah, it's out in California and I want to get into it. You know, I said, great. My advice is pick a great territory. Just pick where there's wealth and population density. Those are the two factors. So we went our separate ways. My president of one of my other brands, the fitness brand, he left, went to School of Rock for a minute, and then StretchLab picked him up as employee number one. So that then got me a little bit of lens into the stretching industry. Nothing had really hit Boston yet. But I remembered the conversation with the family friend 2015, which was, you know, 2 years prior. I then remembered that, wait a second, I used to stretch and train one of the partners of the Boston Red Sox. So stretching was very much in our wheelhouse. All the one-on-one studios that we developed, we had a one-on-one stretch component in every single session. So I said to my team, I'm like, yeah, I think we're getting into the stretching business because this is real. So, you know, being a fact finder, what I did, and I have to really know everything if I'm going to get involved. So I took my daughter, flew around the country, visited all the competitors, looked at their stretch, was surprised that even within the franchise brands, there wasn't a system. Everyone did something different. It's like, huh, I'm pretty sure we can do it better. Came back to Boston, spent 9 months just on the stretch. We built this nasty stretch, you know, team of athletic trainers. My muscular therapist was involved in it. And so we started with the product, right? So, you know, if you have a really good product, whether it's food, service, stretching, fitness, that's what's going to prevail. So we've got a fantastic product, and then launched the first location, as you mentioned, November, and then sold, you know, 2-3 franchises. And the funny part is, before even opening the first location, I send one of my Get In Shape owners the stretch, one of the early stretching routines, a 25-minute protocol. She started practicing on her members. Then the husbands were coming and getting stretched. She says, Brian, I want to meet for coffee. I meet her for coffee, Cafe Nero on a Sunday. She says, I want to buy a franchise. And I'm like, well, there's no franchise. She goes, well, I want to buy a franchise. So I'm like, all right, let me get the franchise going. So she was franchisee number one. She did really well. We sold like 3 or 4, and then COVID hit. And that definitely, as you know, derailed everyone. So we had to kind of march through that and, you know, got to the other side. Things started taking off again. And here we are today, as I said, 30 stretch meds open, 27 in development, and ready to really, you know, start doubling in size until we hit probably 300-400 locations.
And what's the difference between a stretch one-on-one and, let's say, a yoga class or a power yoga class?
Good question. So let me hit you with just the industry kind of layout. I think it'll help. So physical therapy, been around forever. It's a vertical, right? It treats an injury. Chiropractic then hit the scene and treats a musculoskeletal injury or dysfunction. Then what hit the scene was massage therapy about 20 years ago. Now, massage therapy is, you know, soft tissue work, right? And now stretch therapy, a brand new vertical, which is moving every joint in the body the way it's supposed to move. Nothing has ever done this before. And quick side note, when I left the area rep position for the franchise brand, that company, that founder, bought the first Elements massage. And back in 2005, asked me if I wanted to get it, or 2006, wanting to get aboard. And I literally said, quote, I don't see massage becoming a big thing, end quote. So I missed the boat on that. So when I saw, and now there are thousands of massage concepts. So when I saw stretching materializing, I'm like, I'm not going to miss out on this. So when it comes to yoga, your question about yoga, so yoga is active stretching, right? You have to actively get into a pose. You can't get into every angle yourself. You just can't. You're not off the ground on a table. So there's certain things you can do. Where at StretchMed, what we do is we are going to passively put you through certain ranges. We get to an end range. Then we do what's called a PNF, which is proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation. So it's really just the word that we're going to get you to contract the muscle to then get you to relax, and then we get to a deeper stretch. So it's really just get you into deep stretches that you wouldn't be able to bring yourself to. You can relax. You know, the tables have, you know, 6 inches of high density foam. It's just amazingly comfortable. We've got another thing that's hot off the press, and we've driven the price of stretching down. So we're starting to really grow like crazy. And the reason is only $80 a month to come in and get, we call them 4 credits. And each credit is a 25-minute stretch. You'll begin your stretch using this flexibility trainer. You'll spend 15 minutes on a trainer, which is essentially like a dynamic warm-up. Then we get you on a table. We'll spend 10 minutes on the table. That's just the entry stretch, but it goes all the way from, you know, everyone starts on the trainer for 15 minutes, and then you're either going to spend 10 minutes, 25 minutes, 40 minutes, or 55 minutes on the table, having a therapist take you through the different protocols.
So it's an assisted stretch then, I guess. So
correct. Having one-on-one assisted stretching.
So I guess the trainer can then get places that you can't get to on your own.
100%. Yep. Just much harder to bring yourself, relax, deep breathe, keep, because the more tense you are, the more you fight the stretch. So the key is to really breathe and relax.
And it's not just for pro athletes, right? Stretching is very important for all of us, especially, I guess, if we sit at a desk all day.
You know, the body was not designed to sit at a desk or sit in cars. And when you think about it, just conceptually, right? So the first step in the aging process is the loss of range of motion. So the minute you don't move, think about it. If a joint has a range of motion and you don't use the full range of motion, well, the muscle involved in the range of motion atrophies and you lose it. So that's why as we get older, we lose muscle tone, our metabolism slows, we gain our weight, we move slower. It's just a flywheel. Yep. Maintaining range of motion or regaining range of motion and then using that new range of motion actively is how you're gonna live the, you know, I think your longevity, health, live your best life.
Exactly right. And there's a lot in the press and literature about longevity, and certainly the whole idea of even weightlifting into your older age, or certainly mobility, is very important.
Yeah, 100%. And the goal really, right, is when you stretch, if you don't use the range of motion, you'll lose it. So what's happening, we are tricking the central nervous system to allow you this new range. But if you don't prove mastery over the new range, you'll lose it. And the way to prove mastery over the new range is to actually get strong in the new range. That's how you lock in flexibility, which really becomes mobility. Mobility is really the control of a range of motion, where flexibility, you could be flexible but not have any control in that, and then you risk for injury if that happens.
And then have you ever looked at doing anything outside of the US?
Yeah, 100%. StretchMed definitely is, it's really, you know, our goal for the time being is 1,000 locations worldwide. And I mentioned I'm going to be spending time in Buenos Aires pretty soon, and plan is to open up a StretchMed there. It'll kick off South America, and then, you know, me personally, just going to start to travel a bit and then put locations in all key markets all around the world, because last time I checked, the body moves the same way everywhere in the world.
Yeah. No, so it's a great business model in that case. And what's the plan in the short term? How do you fund this? How do you fund the rollout for StretchMed?
Yeah, so great question. Really, really good question. And I bootstrapped everything from as long as I can remember, right? Self-funded everything, bootstrapped everything. We've really good margins. Typically, most of the last three companies I've run, we've reached $1 million in profit within 5 years. So that's been my track record. What I realized at 53, it's like, you know what? There's got to be a better way. I want to do it faster. So what we're now doing, which I'm really excited about, is we're going to do a Reg CF equity crowdfunding raise with a company called Republic.
It is.
And I'm really excited. I think it's going to be fantastic because we're going to give our owners, our franchise owners, are going to get a 20% discount on the valuation of the entity. And we're going to raise $500,000 in exchange for 5% equity in the parent entity. And the plan is every 50 units we open, we're going to do another 5% raise. And every 50 units we open, the valuation should go up $10 million. So every bring us to 300 locations. We should have a $50 million valuation at 300 locations. Then we're going to go public. And at that point, we would have sold 25% equity. So the plan for me is every entity I now start, the minute we hit a $3 million valuation, we're going to start selling equity. And then what's cool is the owners get a discount, the employees get a discount, the customers of the franchises are going to get a 20% discount. And they care about that brand. Rather than have a company go public that has a bunch of brands where no one really cares about the other ones, these customers get to really get excited about the brand that they love, that they want to invest in.
And actually, the metrics for the top co, the top company, it must be pretty cookie cutter. You'll know roughly what a site will do, and you take a percentage of that revenue from that site, and as you roll out, you get more visible earnings.
Yeah, it's a 6% royalty, which is pretty standard across the industry. It's highly highly fragmented with different owner operators. So it's a very secure revenue stream. Every single franchise owner has their entire life savings on the line, personal guarantees. And the market, like private equity are paying, 20x EBITDA on these type of franchise wars. And private equity is even buying large multi-unit franchisee systems. So
yeah,
it's pretty exciting.
I mean, it's a strong recurring revenue theme. You sit there and the money comes in each month.
Long term. And another cool thing, we have a couple locations. We have a bunch of locations on the fitness side that have been open for 17 years that have four different owners. But guess what? There's 6%. So it's there's transfer fees every time a buy and sell occurs. It's like, it's an amazing wealth creation vehicle. And we talked earlier, my next chapter is going to be a company called Everest Franchise Development. And what that's going to be, it's going to be a franchise of franchisors. So I want to create an ecosystem, because what I learned three, 4 years ago is of the 4,000 franchisors that exist today, 2,000 don't get past 20 units. So
we have on the London stock market, we have a business called Franchise Brands that is listed. And that's a very similar thing in the fact that they have bought lots of franchise businesses that do anything from cleaning oil from a deep fat fryer to walking dogs. And they are almost the top co on the top co of the franchise.
Wow. Yeah, that's really cool. So that's a great model, and I'm excited about that, because the difference is this though. Here's the difference. The Everest is not gonna own the brands. Everest is gonna be a franchise of franchisors. Okay. So the difference, we may have a 10% equity stake, but it'll be minority. We don't wanna own, because the minute you own it's a lot of work to own and drive the brand. I want to support founder. We want to support founders. And then the cool thing is we'll have some C-level people that want to come in and buy a system that has 100 units. Instead of buying five Orange Theories, they can buy a whole 100-unit system, but they'll be under the umbrella of Everest. So they'll have the back office, the support, the best practices, the legal protection that is definitely needed out there.
So we IPO'd a franchise business many years ago, and it was a US franchise business, which looked at cleaning and cooking oil. And the guy who founded it was an English guy who went to Florida. And he said, what's most important is that, as you quite rightly said, Brian, those business owners have everything on the line. I can't sit in Florida and know if a technician is not turning up in LA. I don't know who to call, but the guy who runs the LA business has that covered before the guy's even phoned in sick. And it's an incredible model, actually, because you have all these very hardworking people wanting to work for you.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, it's a big business. We've taken some of his life savings, and we talk about this with my team. And like, this is like, and on the fitness side, we stopped selling franchise since COVID. We haven't sold a single fitness franchise since COVID, because I needed to make sure we were back before I take someone's money. And now, and even despite that, we're opening the first relaunch proof of concept model. So Corbett's going to open it. We're gonna show exactly how it's done, rearticulate the systems and ops manual, and then we'll start cranking them out.
And when does your crowdfunding go live?
Yeah, so it's gonna go. So I just notarized the document this morning, actually. So it's gonna go live. I think in the next couple of weeks, Republic.com. It'll be StretchMed is the brand. And the cool thing, using the joint as a comp, like the joint chiropractic, U.S. publicly traded company has 800 locations with a valuation of $186 million. Now, if someone bought, $10,000 of stock in that entity when it was worth $10 million, 18x, the 18x that investment. So, and the cool thing with this crowdfunding is you don't have to be a accredited investor. So the smallest increment is $250. So I'm super excited about that. My kids are going to buy, and then, use a Roth IRA to buy the stock. So then it can get shielded from tax, which I think is another great strategy. So I'm going to run a webinar with my StretchMed owners to talk them through like this process. You, your employees, your customers, and cool to kind of get into a company real early stage and then have an exit later.
So what?
It's
how many
it's,
sites at the moment? Well, how many?
30 open, 27 bought and paid and in the queue. Probably 10 of those will open in the next 3 months. Like we're actively signing leases. So we'll be at 40 probably the next 3 months.
And then what sort of revenue would the Topco receive for 60 sites?
So this year, the rate of travel, we should come in between $500,000 and $1 million in EBITDA, like at this pace. And then the plan with the $500,000 raise is we're gonna hire a COO. So I've got a guy I'm interviewing that took European Wax from 300 locations to 900. And it's pretty amazing guy. So I'm just gonna, start building out the killer C-suite team. And then we'll do some flips. So fast way to grow a franchise brand is you open up a location, and like we're doing in LA, and you flip it. You open one in Manhattan, you flip it. You open one in Miami, you flip it. So you get your capital back, but you created a spark.
Yeah,
and it just takes off. So we'll just open, and then probably the second raise will open and flip internationally. So we'll come to the UK, we'll go anywhere and look at the most impact that we can get to open a store. We'll open it, and then we'll sell it to someone local, get our capital back, and then keep rolling.
I guess the question is, what's the maximum number of sites, you think?
really, we could, I mean, when you think about, like, now that we've got the price down to $80 a month, we've got people coming in that they're you know, a waitress at Chili's that has sciatica can now walk across the street and pay $80 a month to get stretched once a week. This is going to be, we could have 10,000 locations worldwide. I mean, no question, because why wouldn't we? Right, the key is the market. How big is the market? Now at $300 a month, $400 a month, it's a much smaller market. At $80 a month, massive market.
That makes a lot of sense.
And, you know, I'd love to jump on your podcast again in the future, because we've got, you know, once Everest goes live and other things happen, it's pretty fun.
As my regular listeners know, Brian, I like to close on three questions. So if I can take one at a time, please. Your greatest inspiration or mentor?
Geez, that's a tough one. So I would say, you know, because I was really lucky to have an amazing grandfather, you know, amazing father, like, you know, some really amazing male figures that shaped me. But one guy that really, really had a significant impact, his name was Bob Shields. And at, you know, 20 years old, I mentioned earlier, I used to personal train his daughter and met him, and we spent the year trying to open a health club. He was the first person outside of my family that really believed in me. And he's like, if I only had, you know, 10 Bryans, what could I do? So that one individual was the first person that, you know, 'cause your family's one thing, but when someone that's not your family, so he really build my confidence to the point where when our thing didn't work out, I had the confidence to go open my own thing. So, and I'm grateful I was able to go back and find him, you know, 5-6 years ago and then take him out to lunch. And then he ended up passing away a couple of years ago. So yeah, he was amazing.
Yes. That third party or ex family validation is important.
Yeah. Critical.
And then a book which has inspired you. And you can have more than one.
Yeah, so if I go back, you know, just to be fair in terms of the – and I'll talk about a couple of them. So, way back, you know, the E-Myth was pretty profound. And now it's kind of like it's just mainstream. The E-Myth and what was cool about the E-Myth is the, you know, the three different personalities, the entrepreneur, manager, the manager, and the technician. And, you know, loved his writing, loved his work. That had a killer impact. Rich Dad Poor Dad blew me away, you know, developing, you know, acquiring, producing assets, cash flow quadrant. And then maybe the other, I'd say, really, really impact I had was Think and Grow Rich, of course. That you got to read that 3, 4, 5 times. And then Good to Great. And Good to Great, Jim Collins, as you know, and I like to paraphrase, good people destroy companies.
Yeah.
That's what I learned. And when I hired my first great manager, I'll never forget it. I was like, wow, this is what it's like to have great people. So yeah, those are probably the top ones.
And then finally, Brian, what piece of advice would you give to a young person starting out on their career?
Yeah, I would say, you know, for me, I look back, I would tell a young person, whatever your income is, live on no more than 70% of it. And the remaining 30% gets invested as follows. 10% on learning, because if you don't do that, you're never going to move the needle. 10% on investing in something that would be considered high risk, ideally a business. You want to start saving for a business, and then 10% in something very safe, like an ETF fund, something. And then if you maintain that discipline and never break the framework. Now, of course, the more money you make, you can lessen what you're going to live on. But also you got to be careful, because if, you know, some people just they're just way too aggressive with what they save and their quality of life isn't great. So, and had I done that, I did the math, because my mistake is constantly going all in, on my companies, which are fruitful, but then you've got to diversify. So I think, you know, I think I went back and it was like, I'd have like $3 or $4 million today had I, you know, I'd have a lot more money than I do now had I followed that framework. So it's kind of a disciplined approach to getting to the, getting to the end.
No, that's very wise words. And then how can listeners get in touch with you, Brian?
And then one more thing, young people, particularly for young people, and I think is important, is that I think there's a culture of like, what can I get from this relationship? But if everyone focuses on what can they give before they get, I would have young people go find someone that is, really where you want to be, work for free, gain the experience, get the knowledge. You can't buy it in school, and then, monetize that kind of early on.
No, that makes sense. And then how can listeners get in touch?
Yeah. So, my LinkedIn, Brian R. Cook, you can find me on LinkedIn. And then stretchmedstudios.com is really the primary brand that we're scaling right now. That's the main one. Those are two ways, and that work.
Brian, this has been absolutely magic. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Nick. Have a great day.
This content is issued by Zeus Capital Limited, which is authorised and regulated in the United Kingdom by the Financial Conduct Authority for designated investment business and is a member firm of the London Stock Exchange. Nothing in this podcast should be viewed as investment advice. Listeners should consult an investment professional before making any decisions regarding topics mentioned in this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast are those of the participants and not of Zeus. Please note that participants in this podcast may have financial interests in the matters discussed.